This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Welcome to Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. And here is where we talk to knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs that try to help them. Today, we're going to try to talk about what it takes to be a founder. And by that, I mean the founder of a program for a struggling teens, special needs types programs. There's a number of terms for that. And my guests today, I got two of them, John Winton. John is the co-founder of Breakwater Expeditions and is now the director and owner of Echo Springs. Well, good morning, John. Welcome.
Good morning, Lon. Thanks for having me on this phone call. Appreciate it.
Oh, okay. Well, glad to have you here and get your expertise. And then we also have Doug Kim Brown. Doug is the founder of Echo Springs and very passionate about helping young adults find their path in life through education, healthy boundaries, positive communication skills, and support. Well, welcome, Doug. Glad to have you here.
Nice to be back with you, Lon. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, well, this is a repeat, I think, for both of you. And I'm going to talk about two programs that have been collaborating. And John has just bought the Echo Springs from Doug Kim Brown, so they're in the midst of a transition. But Doug, I'd like to start with you. What were you trying to do when you founded the Echo Springs about 21 years ago?
Thank you. Well, what I was trying to do was to establish a platform for students, young men and women, to work on issues allowing them to live independently and succeed in directions that they were self-defining. So it needed to be a safe place where they could look at different parts of identity and develop experiences that would serve them as reference points down the road. I had done some research before that. Prior to this, I'd been headmaster at Rocky Mountain Academy for several years. As I left that, I was looking for another population that was underserved. I found that no one was actually working with young adults, 18 to 25-year-olds. And I also discovered that roughly 250,000 students a year drop out of colleges nationally in their freshman year, roughly 125,000 sophomores, and it halves every year after that. I recently had the opportunity to talk with a senior research professor at an Eastern university who told me that the figures actually haven't changed that much in 20 years, which was interesting. And there's still not much known developmentally about the needs of 18 to 25-year-olds. That's a sort of a hot topic, I guess, in research circles these days. So I look forward to more coming out. But there really hasn't been a lot. So yeah, in many ways, we were inventing the wheel.
Yeah, you were one of the early ones getting involved with this population. A term I'm hearing that professionals or researchers seem to like is emerging adults, and there's some changes going on. And that whole area that's been fascinating is the new childhood is going up from 18 to almost, some are saying 30, because the brain isn't really fully developed until 25 or 30. So you were trying to serve this population because obviously they're having problems, right?
That's correct. And it was a real strong learning curve for myself as well, not having worked very much with over 18s. and finding, discovering just what their needs were and how to more effectively work with them. So I feel very fortunate to have survived in doing that, and actually to personally, I feel like we have thrived organizationally and individually.
Let's touch a little bit on that population, because a lot of people would think, well, you know, it's a continuum. You're a teenager, and then you're a young adult. What's the difference? They're a little bit more mature. But I gather what you found is there's a more profound difference between, say, 17 and 23.
Oh, absolutely. There are very, very strong differences. Part of it legally. I mean, you know, at 18, you are a legal adult. You can't tell somebody what to do. You've got to invite them and probably have more reasoning with that. You certainly can't just mandate this is what you will do. So it's an offering. That's why we have a three-day interview here, so that students have an informed choice about what they're going to pursue. Mm-hmm. And they see if it's an effective match for them. And as they begin to come to terms with what their needs are, go ahead.
I don't want to go too much into that. That's a whole other topic in itself. But it sounds like it was a situation to where you looked at that. You saw a need, and almost nobody was fulfilling it, and so you jumped into it. And that sounds, I guess, the entrepreneurial spirit might be describe where you were at.
Well, I wouldn't have defined myself as such at the time, but looking back on it, sure. There's a very wise man named Lon Woodbury who once said to me, the good thing about working for yourself is you can pick any 23 hours of the day.
Yes, and I'm still
And I laughed and then realized that what you were saying was true. Just put a lot of extra work into that in any entrepreneurial field. So it's blood, sweat, and tears.
It's blood, sweat, and tears, and it's also having a vision that nobody else is seeing. Well, John, let's bring you into this. What were you trying to do? Same question. What were you trying to do when you founded Breakwater about 4 years ago?
Yeah, for me, Lon, just kind of going back through, you know, the last 20 years of my life, I've always appreciated and recognized, probably even before that, probably when I was 12, I started to do trips with smaller groups. As a young adolescent myself, and really have always realized the power of experiences, the power of groups, and how that can really, you know, affect individuals. I was able to work with wilderness programs close to 6 to 8 years, doing trips for therapeutic wilderness programs, and then working for programs that were working with teens and some young adults just doing expeditions and trips with students, families, et cetera. The reality is throughout the years, I've always acknowledged the power of an experience, something that's culminating and really something you can look back on and realize the power. For me, as you know, I kind of move further and further and further in my career, there's a couple of jumping points that realized there was a kind of a hole where students had the ability to go out into the wilderness and have these amazing turnarounds, but sometimes it wasn't necessarily followed through with, and they were able to access that environment later on during their stay as they were progressing and transitioning towards whether that be college or whatnot. The other thing I really recognize is there was a ton of staff and guides and professionals that worked through this industry and started out at the core and the base of working with teens day in and day out, slowly worked themselves up through the ranks. And as they worked themselves up through the ranks and started to grow as professionals, they got themselves further and further away from some of their passions. I also realized that there was a lot of programs out there, young adult and teens, and programs that weren't even in the therapeutic industry that really could utilize the environments that we had, that I had been playing in for many years, whether it's Alaska or the Bahamas or the Green River in Missouri, all these magical places. There's these, all the schools and programs can really utilize the power of those experiences, but don't necessarily have the ability to access them. there's guide services out there all throughout the United States, thousands of them, thousands and thousands. But they don't have the power of the individuals and the guides that I've met throughout the years to take those experiences and make them into meaningful experiences. So the idea behind Breakwater Expeditions was to really create a platform and a service that was attainable from all types of folks, including families, other therapeutic programs throughout the country, and other organizations. Like, we work with young adult cancer survivors and hemophiliacs, and there's this whole other branch of folks who could really utilize those environments and qualified guides and therapists to connect where they're at in their lives and make the moves that are appropriate.
Well, it sounds like you have a pretty broad vision there. And the same thing applies. It sounds like you saw something that wasn't being done that needed to be done, and you jumped into it. Now, are you working with young adults or with adolescents or both? Which was it?
Breakwater Expeditions works with teens, young adults, adults. We work all types of organizations, and we work with families. So that goes everywhere from, you know, a 9-year-old to grandpa who's, you know, 72. So the populations that we're able to really work with in Breakwater is pretty broad, and Breakwater does majority of our trips on, you know, water-based experiences, whether it be canoeing or sea kayaking, et cetera, rafting. So everyone can join. It doesn't really matter what your capabilities are. You can access these experiences.
Okay, well, it sounds like the same.
If I could interject here, this is Doug.
Sure, Doug.
One of the things that really attracted me to John and Breakwater and the group of people associated was it was a very diverse vision, and not just a vision, but he's pulling it off. There's many stories, too many to relay in an hour, but a lot of examples of just working with very different kinds of populations that I found very interesting and compelling. Leukemia patients on a kayak trip, you know, graduate students in psychology. Quite a spectrum, not just the typical population that we think of in terms of struggling teens or struggling young adults, but again, a much broader vision, and articulating that, pulling it off. So it's not just an idea, it's a reality that he was quickly able to put together with his group of people.
Okay, yeah. Well, it sounds, you know, I would use the same term, entrepreneurial, with John, in that he saw something, got a vision, and then acted on it. And then the next question I want to get to is a little bit of self-introspection, if I can get you guys to do that. What personal strengths did you find were key to success? And what I'm thinking of is there's a lot of people that have worked, you know, Doug, I remember meeting you years and years ago, way before you founded Echo Springs. And there's a lot of people we worked with that were doing very well, that were doing good, but almost all of them did not found a program. And both of you stepped up the plate, had a vision, and carried it out. So what personal strengths did you find were really necessary, besides being an entrepreneurial? Well, Doug, you want to go with that one?
Sure. Off the top, perseverance. You really have to be dedicated in terms of perseverance. It's not for the faint of heart, that's for sure. And it takes, I think, a real concentration on what that vision is and a willingness to be flexible with that. So the original idea I had was actually somewhat comparable to what John has talked about doing with the diversity of population. I found it just not easier, certainly, but it just seemed more appropriate for me to focus on the needs of young adults, particularly bright and I'd just say dysfunctional young men and women who wanted to move on in their lives. There are many other populations out there. And I think you have to not only have the vision and the perseverance, but you need to be able to develop a team of people who work together, who understand their strengths and weaknesses. I think I evidently have the strength of vision to carry something out, but I've definitely needed the services and support of Rhea Verbanek, who was our administrative director for many years. So while I would be out there saying, here's what we need to do, she's the one who would have to say, okay, here's how it gets funded, and where are the receipts, and this will be the schedule. Teach other people to do that too. So it's a combination of form and substance that you have to really manifest to bring this about.
Now, you would obviously have to really want to do it, because there's a lot of extra hassle in founding a program than just working with the kids and working in a program. Well, John, same question. What personal strengths did you find were key to your success?
I think first ones, you got to be a little bit crazy, but and I say that in the means of crazy in the fact that the overall outcome of what you're looking to really achieve far outweighs the risk. And I really think it takes a person to kind of shut down a little bit of that risk part, and the part that says I shouldn't jump off this bridge and try this, and really keep that vision in terms of the dream of, for me, of at the end, if this all were to work out, what can be accomplished? And how many lives can be affected by this? Not by myself, but by all these individuals who are so talented. If they all got together and touched these families and touched these populations and touched these young adults and these teens, what could really be the outcome of all of that? And to keep that in the forefront of my mind has really allowed me to drive through the hard times and drive through the extra hours and et cetera, et cetera. And I think Doug's right on. It's impossible to solely be a founder. I had to really, in terms of my strengths, recognize right off the get-go of what I wasn't good at, and to really pull in those who were able to fulfill the picture and make it a reality. And, you know, I think it takes someone who has that ability to really work well with others, not take anything personally, and, you know, keep the focus on the dream and the passion of what's created at the end. And, yeah, just a lot of time and energy.
Time and energy and the dream. I think the dream's really important. One thing I forgot to mention early on for our people that are listening live, that at the bottom right of the screen, there's a chat function, and we have a question, a couple questions by, well, it's guest Jessica, but the computer assigns the name. So is this geared to make boys men? And I think there's another question in there. Is it just for boys or is it co-ed? And I think both programs can be addressed too. And let's go with that one. Is it designed to make boys into men? I presume girls into women too. But when do you want to tackle that one?
It is co-ed. Echo Springs was founded on a co-ed basis. There's always been, I think, almost always a higher population of young men to young women. And in a sense, you can say it's boys to men. That doesn't really fully credit what goes on. We focus on character, discipline, and direction. Those are key components of our approach. I think it informs a lot of our attitude and beliefs about how to work with young men and women. And anyone who comes to us is legally an adult. They might be 20 years old and some acting out more at a 12 to 14-year-old level, let's say. But they have to quickly be able to get in tune with the fact that they're responsible and accountable for their actions. I have to say, since my particular past, I've also worked with first graders, actually kindergartners through high school, and pretty much advocated for the same sorts of things. Obviously, you don't talk to a first grader like you talk to a 20-year-old, but advocated for the same kinds of notions, certainly, and same sorts of experiences that assist young men and, well, young people to become effective young men and women.
Okay, well, John, did you want to tackle that? And I have another question here that's sort of interesting. I think it applies largely to you. Is it progressive? This is the term. I'm not sure exactly what the question means. Is it progressive to go as a family? So, John, the two questions.
Is it progressive to go with the family? So, I want to key on the word progressive. And for me, family work is extremely important in terms of overall, and it really depends on each family and each person in that family of the importance of tying into the family at that moment. I think it's an integral and a key part that the whole entire family system is worked on. You know, whether you're a young adult or a teen, that's just reality. Obviously, folks who are moving forward into heading to college is, you know, it's time to let go, and it's time to let those young adults be self-absorbed and find their way, and that's just part of it. But the reality is through that process, they need the support of the family system, which may or may not have been a healthy situation in the past, by no one's fault, just by the lack of knowledge and ability to be a good support system. So is it progressive? Yeah, it's progressing people forward. It's progressing families forward. It's part of the key for, you know, I think if you look at folks who have historically been able to be successful and move forward in their life, they've had some type of system that resembles a family system or is a strong family system that has helped them through it, no matter. So I don't know if that answers the question in terms of progressive, meaning is this something new? Is this something... No, I don't think, you know, I think working with families is nothing new at all. It's just the manner in which we're looking at doing it within Breakwater Expeditions is a little different. And the length of time that we're really asking families to go out there and spend with each other and or with other clinicians and folks who specialize in this family work is, I think, progressive and a little different. And we're asking for a little more commitment than a 2 or 3 day workshop at the end of a wilderness program. We're asking to stop everything that they do and put some priority into the family. Let's spend some quality time together and make this happen. And I think that's something that's really has been lost in the last 50 years. The quality family time is dissipating, and they need to be taught on a simple basis of how to reconnect to that.
Okay, well, how about the previous question, the one that Doug had talked about, the co-ed and boys into men question. How do you respond to that?
Yeah, you know, for me, I don't know, you know, boys to men, is there a definitive line that ever exists? I don't think so. I think we all have the ability to make decisions every day, and some of those are heading us towards adulthood or adult decisions or decisions that support maturity, and some of those are those decisions that resort back to childhood. And it doesn't matter how old you are, whether you're 40 or you're 50 or you're 18, we all have those decisions day in and day out to go one direction or the other. I can't say that I haven't resorted back to some childish, you know, behaviors. Heck, probably in the last week, we all do. But yes, it's important that as folks, you know, become young adults, that more often than not, that those decisions start to become those that are more mature, more thought out, more responsible, and really ones that head toward their overall direction that they want to head. So I hope that helps.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go on to the next question I have, and I'm talking again about the two programs, and then we'll get into the translation and the how you're melding all this together between the two programs. But what ingredients did each program have that helped their students, specifically help their students? And you've sort of touched on this. Could you focus on it a little bit more? And John, you want to continue with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think some of it really in terms of the greens goes down to kind of a baseline. Every program throughout the United States has some type of ingredients, and I think when you start to look at them, some of them are very similar in nature. In some way, it comes down to semantics. But I really think that it's important to acknowledge that the ingredients that are within programs are pure and they're whole, and they're good ingredients. So difference between, you know, unbeat flour versus having wheat, you know, it's just stuff that's really going to have some substance to it. And I think paying the attention to some of those ingredients, you know, overall to cap everything is probably one of the most important things for me to think about. Second is those that are within the program that have the power and ability to really deliver those ingredients, those who know the timing and the experience of the individuals and just putting the right people in the right place that aligns to their strengths and their skill sets. And tying in a relationship with young adults or teens and families and making it happen. I think all that happens and has to happen in an environment that is removed, quiet, that has space. It needs to be something that is not purely distracted, something that has the ability for a baseline of trust so that things can grow. And I think it's important that it then is, you know, those relationships and those ingredients are tested in an environment that's not as pure and not as easy to navigate. But there's got to be a baseline at the beginning that is really protected. So that when you go out there and reach some of these, you know, tougher situations, that there's an assistance along the way. You know, you don't. I think, you know, progression, I guess, is one of the ingredients that I'm really saying. You don't jump in a bunch of a sea kayak with folks and then, you know, get yourself into choppy waters. You slowly work with them over, you know, 2 or 3 days and some pretty mellow cotton. Then you take on a little bit bitter, you know, chop, et cetera, et cetera. So making sure that there's a nice slow progression so that you don't lose people from pushing them beyond their limitations.
I think that's especially important because these people, the ones your clients, tend to be a little bit fragile. They've had some troubles, and they need that slow, steady reintroduction back to probably where they should have been all along.
For sure.
Doug, you wanted to talk about that? You know what, the ingredients, the question was, what ingredients did each program have that helped their students? And so in Echo Springs, what were some of the ingredients that you see are most important?
Well, there's several components. One of the things that really strikes me over and over again, without getting into a whole lot of story about what Echo Springs does, one basic is that we take regular breaks. We follow North Idaho College's calendar year, not for the length of time that they break, but we pause during those times. All students must leave, both phases 1 and 2. That's 5 times a year where we ask people to go away for a little bit and practice what they've been learning. And oftentimes it's appropriate to go home, not always. So we assist them in developing alternative places and experiences. Okay, so 5 times a year they have to leave, and 5 times a year we expect them to come back. In 21 years, we've lost, I believe, 3 students in that process, but people have declined to return to us. That's a phenomenal statistic, and we have attrition from for other reasons at other times. But when you stop and think about why does a kid come back here who knows they're going to have a curfew, has to abide by our agreements, has to, you know, regulate their behavior pretty tightly, why would they do that over and over again? And they all say the same thing. I just had a talk recently with a group of Phase 1 students. The reason they come back is because it's safe here. There's an emotional safety and a physical safety. There are remarkably few fistfights here over the course of the years. And we've been very blessed, knock on wood, nothing major ever. I think that safety is a compelling reason for students to want to tie in. And part of our job is to point out that we can set the tone, we can make demands, but we can't make it safe. We all have that. We all have a commonality of agreement. No, you know, it's a drug, alcohol-free campus in the first phase, second phase too. But in terms of progression, they're going to start with us in a very external, fairly removed environment for a matter of months, and then sequence themselves down into Coeur d'Alene, which is a small city, probably more like they're going to be living the rest of their life. And they live in supervised situations there as well, but have a much wider scope, and they begin to internalize a lot of the messages that they've been working with in the first phase and seeing how that fits into regular life. How does that fit into having a job and going to school and developing a social life? And there's a lot of ways that we debrief that individually and as a group. There are a lot of experiences that are offered to them in which they're able to rely on us for safety, come back and say, okay, here's what I did. But they're urged in that second phase to get out there and really integrate. We also have a third phase where they're living independently of us. They show up sort of like you'd meet with a counselor or a coach, and they talk about what it's like to really be on their own. And then from there, they make their own plans. But the components of that, first of all, is external structure in the first phase, and an expectation that people will conform to that. And what I tell students is, trust your own experience. I'm willing to live by the results here. Are you growing or not? Do you like what's happening or not? If you don't, we have a problem. So you have that safety feature first and foremost. And then you have, I think, just great experiences in which they begin to feel a sense of community. Like, that's very powerful, that they're not alone. Other people are like them as well. And because we're in a small community of Bonner's Ferry, which I think is a very welcoming community generally, older people in the community are open to sharing their life stories and experiences with them and including them. So there is that sense of inclusion of how do you get on the adult wheel? What does that actually mean? Academically, we've partnered with North Idaho College, I think, in a very nice way. They've really extended themselves to us, and it's been an excellent collaboration through the years, where they can utilize college support services and begin to understand that they don't have to do it alone if they're confused, and they can reach out to that. So we teach them how to use the tools that are available. I think also families, you know, they're very suspicious in the beginning. Is anything really going to change? So when they begin to understand that their young man or young woman is actually heading the way that they want to go, and delivering, it allows for a trust bridge to develop that way towards the family and from the family, so they can begin to communicate at a different level. And generally, things begin to normalize.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask another question I'm sure you both have gotten into. It's an area of, and this is from a question from the chat listener. It's generally about nutrition. But do you think GMOs, and I think that's genetically modified, but the GMOs they allow in their food have anything to do with the issues that people are having these days? That's sort of off the wall question, but does either one of you want to tackle that one?
Well, I'll take some of a crack at it. GMOs across the board aren't necessarily bad, in my opinion. I mean, there is a place for some of that. And sure, if you, not just GMOs, but if you take, say, refined sugars and flour, so reduce some of the things that we know contribute to a sense of hyperactivity or dysfunction, sure, that's very helpful. One of the things we do here from the first phase is have students contribute to the garden, so they're growing organic food, and as much as possible, we try and do that without having GMO seed in there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, John, you have any comments?
That seems to be an increasingly difficult thing to do, but so far, so good.
Yeah, I mean, I think, so I'm going to take it to the next little level is, you know, I think, you know, GMO versus, you know, not GMO. The reality is our world has become a lot quicker, a lot more complicated, a lot more synthetic, and less real. So across the board, if we can get back to some of the real basics, and that goes with food too, the better teens, young adults, families are really gonna thrive. So yes, I do think having whole grain, safe, non-GMO food is a better choice if you have the option and the opportunity to take it. I also think that goes into general health in terms of exercising. That goes into a general health of a program. I mean, Doug, Echo Springs takes 6 weeks off out of the year, which means the faculty that work here are very well rested and have the ability to have a nice balance in their life so that when they show up, they're here and they're part of the experience. And I think that's the truth with families. They, too, need to have that nice balance in terms of showing up for the families when they come into the come home in the evenings and taking time out and really throwing away the phones and having quality experiences like Breakwater provides. So I take that to another level. Yes, I think we've gotten away through manufacturing and making everything quick, bigger, better, faster is gotten us away from some kind of key organic components that have caused a lot of disruption in young adults and teens, and that's a whole nother topic, but you know, that is starting to head down that road in terms of the question.
Okay. Well, I have one more question in this, and then I want to get in to talk about the transition you two are going into. But this is from, again, from the chat function on it. Is this a seasonal program, or do you follow school year time? I think you touched on this, but could you sort of clarify that?
We are year-round, to clarify that. We're in operation 12 months of the year, and we do follow the North Idaho College calendar year. So, for instance, summer session is now on with the college. They break, I think it's July 26th. They break for about a month. We break for 2 weeks. There's a period of time at Thanksgiving for 5 days. We parallel that at the holidays for Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's. We break the last day of exams for the fall semester. We commence usually the Monday after New Year's, and then we take spring break. We take students to enroll for 12 months of the year.
And Lon, I'll answer for Breakwater. And it's generally Breakwater trips. Our expeditions are a week in length. We do have a few that are 14 to 21 days during the summer that we offer for teens and young adults. And I want to kind of bring this back into one of the key components that we talked about in terms of the ingredients that I think is really, you know, part of, you know, successful programming is Breakwater really assists in creating culminating experiences that are memorable and experiences you're able to reach back to and pull from and move forward. And even within our experiences, so you have a week-long trip, within those there's generally a culminating experiences, and it could be different for everybody. So Breakwater helps schools and programs and individuals and organizations and really creating, you know, experiences that they can not only use as a catalyst for their success, but also ones that when things are getting tough, they can reach back and kind of relate to and grab into. And I think Echo Springs, you know, throughout its stay has some really culminating experiences. And I think if you look at every program out there, there's key points that allow students to feel that success. And then there's other ways and platforms that are just set out there where individuals have the ability to create those culminating experiences on their own timeline that matches up with their own dreams and passions.
And on the question from the listener, I gather part of what you're saying there is that Breakwater does go year round, but you might have more intensive in the summer, taking advantage of the summer season. Is that correct?
Well, we basically follow the sun. So, you know, in the winter, we're down in Florida and the Bahamas and kind of southern areas. You know, towards the bench seasons in the spring, we're doing the Green River and Missouri River. We might head out to the San Juans, places that are kind of mid-country. And then during the summer, we, you know, generally up in the Northwest and heading north up into Alaska, et cetera, et cetera. So we try to chase the sun. So, yes, we are available year-round. We have enough areas and places to touch, to be that, without having to do winter courses unless we choose to do dog sledding for somebody, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, now let's get to the transition part of it. Now, could you explain a little bit to me, is this transition a merger of your programs, or is it a collaboration between two separate programs, or how is that going to shake out with John, you coming in and taking over as director of Echo Springs?
Well, I think, you know, maybe first is to step back a little bit and talk about how this all transpired a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, about probably 8 to 10 months ago, Doug approached me to, you know, let me know that he had it's time for him to look at moving forward. He wasn't ready today, but it was, you know, coming around the corner. I, Breakwater Expeditions, you know, myself, Lars Hall, co-founder of Breakwater and team, had Echo Springs as one of our clients. And really just was able to see eye to eye and see the quality of this program as we did their BC Discovery last year during their one of their annual breaks. And so the stars aligned, and Doug made an incredible offer that I had to think about a little bit for a time, and for me the equation was that Breakwater Expeditions was in wonderful hands, which it is, with Lars Hall and Todd McKibben and crew, and that it would be able to continue its mission statement and touch the families and students that it touches, and that this would be a platform and a canvas that made sense for me to be a part of. And extremely honored and extremely excited. They're two totally separate companies. I'm now on with Echo Springs 95% of my time. Breakwater's stronger than ever and has a couple more spots for the year, but pretty much full for now as it slowly grows for preparation for 2015. So I think it's a symbiotic relationship between the two companies, not a necessarily a collaboration or a merger or whatever. Echo Springs is a master at assisting young adults and teens, or young adults into transitioning forward in their lives and having success and, you know, taking that next step. And Breakwater Expeditions is master at taking guides and those who have been in this business forever and teaming up with organizations and schools and families throughout the country, and that's its mission. So it still serves other young adult programs throughout the country, some that are Echo Springs competitors, and that's fine. The value of that that experience that Breakwater Expedition provides is not just solely to Echo Springs, but to other programs and entities throughout the United States. So does that help?
Yeah, that helps. And Doug, you want to put in your side and have a little bit different question. How is the transition going with you? I don't know. Are you planning to go off and do some fishing or something like that? Or do you have other plans? That's another question. But how's the transition going so far?
It's going very well. I'm very, very pleased. I watched John and Breakwater actually for about 2 years prior to engaging in this whole process of, do you want to take this on? I was in the fortunate position once we had decided to see if Echo Springs could survive the tenure of Doug Kim Brown and Ray Verbanek. We were in the fortunate position to be in a competitive process for people wanting to take on Echo Springs. So it was a very conscious choice on our part to engage with John in particular on doing this. And I've been very impressed with the team of people that he's assembled and the way that he had, and those people have, Chris Ankeny, Emily Phillips, how they have come aboard. And I've been very respectful of the work that's going on, and the people within it have really done a lot of listening and beginning to come forward with their own ideas. So it's been a very healthy process. I'm big on collaboration, both personally and organizationally. So for the other organizations that are out there, really reaching through YADA to collaborate, and that's one way I see myself as moving in response to your question of collaborating in a sort of a wider domain. I'm very fortunate in that I love what I do. It's been a wonderful 21 years, lots of struggles, lots of heartache. But overall, I get up in the morning and I'm excited to go to work to this day. And John has really struck me as an individual, and Chris, Emily as well, as people who feel similarly, have a lot of passion for it. As far as how come I wanted to do this at this point, I'm turning 65, and it just seems like a really good time while I'm healthy, enjoy what I do. The organization's in stable, sound financial shape, organizational shape. It's a great time to affect that transition. I don't really know what's next for me personally. I, at some point, it'll make sense to take a little bit of a time out and consider what, you know, what else is out there to do. 65 used to seem ancient to me. It seems relatively young at this point.
Yes.
And I've got a great role model. My father's turning 91, still golfs and fishes and does all that stuff. So, yeah, we'll see.
Well, somehow
no comment about what that might be.
Somehow I can't see you spending the rest of your time golfing and fishing.
Yeah, I don't really do either one. I just like the fact that other people out there doing it.
Okay. Oh, here's might be an interesting one we can touch on. We got about 4 minutes left. How do you handle the opposition? Because there's some critics of these type of programs of various types that we've had some discussions and been around. How do you handle the opposition when somebody's a critic? Doug, you've been around the longest.
That's a great question, and I don't really look at people. I don't look at life as a lot of opposition to this. I simply had a vision and make an offering, and if you want it, great. If you don't, that's fine too. It's a big world out there. I would actually like to come to terms more. I'd like to know more about what the considerations are for these kinds of programs. Any field is open to abuse, and I'm sure there are abusive situations out there. I'm not really aware of them. I'm open to hearing more about what people...
I could have a long conversation with you on that question at some point when we get down over a cup of coffee or a beer or something.
I would love to. No, I don't have a lot more to say about that. I think we're just doing what we feel is appropriate and correct to do. And that approach has actually worked very well, so we'll see.
Okay. Well, John, you looks like your immediate future is going to have your hands full, even no matter how much you enjoy it.
For sure. And, you know, I really like to say that it's not my hands full, but just the group of wonderful people that have been kind enough to join me in these efforts. To really assist in helping people across the United States and their health, whatever it may be. And I'm just really honored from Doug and Rhea and the team here and how accepting they've been. And as I've told everyone, I really feel like I've been handed a gift on many, many occasions to, one, be able to do Breakwater, and, two, be able to come into an organization where the staff are happy and doing wonderful work with great families and great young adults. And I couldn't feel better at this moment. And I don't know if my hands are full. Full sometimes is a negative connotation. And I guess for me, it's more my hands are happy and excited. And anxious to get moving and see all that has been created and is going to be created out of these two organizations.
Okay, so Doug, I guess a question for you. Are you transitioning out and going to take more time, or are you going to be heavily involved in the transition for a period of time? What's the time frame for your active involvement and sort of?
Well, I have an agreement with Echo Springs for 2 years. We're 3 months into that at this point, and I feel like I'm kind of running as fast as I've ever run doing things, and again, still enjoying it. So I look at this next portion of time from me dedicated to supporting John and Chris as a team in taking on Echo Springs and giving them the insight of what I see and also continuing to teach classes and meet with students. Some of them.
Oh.
Very active that way.
I'm just getting the high sign. We got less than a minute left. And so I want to thank you guys. This has been very, very good. We've been talking about what it takes to be a founder. And I've been talking with Doug Kim Brown, the founder of Echo Springs 21 years ago. And the director and is just coming in to take over is John Wenton, who founded Breakwaters 4 years ago. And we've been talking about transition, elements, personal strengths of this. And Doug, thank you very much. Good to see you here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And John, thank you for showing up and been very enjoyable. Thank you.
Thanks, Lon. Appreciate it. And I just, real honored to be on another phone call with you.
Okay, very good. Well, this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and we've been talking about what it takes to be a founder.